Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Time for our weekly conversation with the man himself, David Locke, brought to you by the Murdoch Auto Group. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? Gorgeous day. Fun things to do. Don't know what they are, but they're going to be there.
But they're there.
They're there.
What point did you feel like
Mecca of fun things to do?
I know. And we're out here doing a remote outside here at RGS Exteriors. Can't ask for a better day. There's no doubt about it. At what point in the fourth quarter do you think the Jazz had a chance to come back and win that thing?
I think it was like we get to like 10. Well, I mean, I'm so analytical based. I know that like, oh, wow, you have like a 1% chance and you're down 18. And actually that's what happens, right? Like even though you had the lead, like it only takes one play or two plays to go in the wrong direction to swing it. But I think there was a moment where, like, didn't we get to, like, 10 with, like, 5 minutes left or something like that? And I was like, whoa,
yeah.
If we get a stop in a bucket, right? I think on the air I said, whoa, we get a stop in a bucket right now. We got a ball game. Like, but there was even as we did that, there was the stunner to me was I think we were down. I'll have to check it. But I think we were down, like, 5 or 6 with 2 minutes left. And, we were down, like, 112-105 with 3 minutes left. And like 7 minutes in 3 minutes is kind of unheard of. And then even Clarkson hits a shot and then you're like, okay, well, we're down 5 with 220 left. And you're like, okay, maybe. But I think it was like when Boyan hit his shot and we went to, you know, it was about 5 minutes left. I think it was about O'Neal hits the three and it's 110-101. We trade baskets and now it's 4 minutes left. And you're thinking, like, maybe. But we don't score for a few possessions there, actually, after that. I think that might have been the sequence where we had all the threes that didn't go. And so it still just felt like, I think I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and look at it. But I think we were down 8 or 9 with 3 minutes left still. So it didn't – I don't know. Maybe not until Jordan Clarkson actually put us ahead there for a second did I actually, oh, my gosh, like, holy cow, we're going to pull this thing off or have a chance to.
Hey, David, walk us through that final possession. So you got just over 5 seconds left on the clock. You're down by 3. At that point, Golden State's wanting to foul, right? Put him on the line for 2. And Clarkson gets that corner 3. I'll kind of walk us through. Is that how the Jazz wanted that to go down? Obviously, they wanted that shot to fall, but walk us through those final 5 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I think because they have the ability to foul, you have to run a play in which someone's catching the ball and immediately letting it fly. And so, yeah, I think that's the answer. I don't know how they did it, but they got Jordan open in one motion, got him shooting. So, I mean, I think they just did on a pure sprint to the corner. It's actually not an easy shot from the top. We've seen Boyan make that shot against Houston on a similar inbound from the side. I think they got what they wanted. I mean, your chances, like your win probability with down 3 with 5 seconds left is probably 3%, maybe 4%. Like you're on the wrong side of the game at that point. Maybe not. Maybe it's higher. I think you're in a pretty low opportunity to win at that point.
Yeah, it sounds about right. You know, Jordan Clarkson, it's funny because you watch Twitter as you're going through a game, and I know you're dialed in. The cries to Jordan Clarkson to stop shooting in the first half to, oh, my gosh, Jordan Clarkson's going to win us this game in the fourth quarter. I think the swings of the emotions regarding Jordan Clarkson are pretty amusing to watch because that's who he is, and that's what you love him for it.
I mean, that was the Jordan Clarkson experience, like in its grandest form and with – kind of, and the essence of what Quinn Snyder has built for him. Right. Quinn has given him this amazing freedom to do whatever, you know, to just play. And Kristen Kenny wrote a story on 00, which is did a story on 00, which is kind of this music background that he's gotten into. And there's some music term that kind of means to be like in the flow without thinking. And that's why that's his number. And that's what Quinn's created with him is this just incredible freedom to do whatever he needs to do. And, I wouldn't have had the wherewithal as a player to keep shooting or as a coach to let him keep shooting at that point, right? Like, I mean, he really had as bad a first half of basketball as I've ever seen Jordan Clarkson have and I've never seen him be better. So the Jordan Clarkson experience is a unique one, but he went to each side of the pendulum at the furthest level than he's ever gone before last night. Because the first half, I think his usage rate was 50, which is insane, even for someone who, like, shoots a lot. I mean, and then he wasn't good while having a usage rate at 50, which is not great. And then all of a sudden, he was the one. Now, you know, I do think there's – we have to understand the circumstances, right? Mike and Don are our number one and two possession users. They're not on the floor anymore. It's been a long time. Like, we've gotten used to it as fans, but for the players, it's a long time that this has been going on, and they're getting worn out by it because everyone's taking a larger role, and the rightful order of the basketball universe has gotten reformed for them, but it's still not right. And so, you know, Joe's kind of, I thought, you know, looked a little bit out of sorts last night. I can't imagine why. He's only been guarded by, you know, Mikal Bridges, DeJounte Murray, and every other best defender in the world that can OG Anunoby guarding him every time he brings the ball up the floor for 32 minutes a night right now. And so Clarkson, I think, probably was feeling that burden a little bit last night, and so then he's off. Though his comment afterwards is interesting, that my looks in the first half were way better than my second. I mean, there were some things he did. They were forcing him. Ron Boone picked it up on the broadcast that they would just not let him get right under any circumstance, which is very playoff-esque, or when you suddenly are the top player on the scouting report, which he's usually not. And then he's also now being guarded by better defenders who can execute their plan, which is new for him. So there's just so many elements to this of where the Jazz are right now, which is that they're battling their beep off very shorthanded for a very long period of time and with a real chance to maintain that number one seed, which is pretty incredible.
So I was watching this game last night, and at halftime I flipped over for some national analysis, and there were two former NBA players that were talking about Steph Curry, and one of them said, "This is the best Steph Curry we've seen in his career." You've watched Steph for a lot of years. Is this the best Steph Curry has been, has looked, has played?
So I believe the Steph Curry 15-16 season is the greatest individual offensive season in the history of the game. I'm pretty comfortable with that. So I can't say this is the best Steph Curry I've ever seen.
Okay.
But that is not in that is not in disrespect to Steph Curry. That's only because I think Steph Curry broke the game in 15-16. Like forever.
How much of that had to do with what was around him in that season as compared to what's around him now?
15-16 is just really the big difference is Clay and Andre Iguodala, right? It's 15-16 is not Durant yet. This is not nearly as good a team as, I mean, thank goodness for Andrew Wiggins last night because we need to stay in the game. Yeah, I mean, this team's not nearly as good as that team. I think, okay, so here are the hands to kind of more directly answer your question. I think Steph is stronger today than he was then. I think his endurance is superior to what it was then. I think he's probably, you know, obviously more experienced and has seen everything more. But in 15-16, he took 11 threes a game before, like, anyone figured that out. You know, he was taking 55 to 60% of his shots as threes and he made 45% of them. Like, it's the greatest single shooting season in the history of the game. He also grabbed 5 rebounds and dished out 7 assists that year. And despite Draymond Green's comment last night that sometimes guys who lead the league in steals are not good defenders, he led the league in steals that year. Like, it's maybe the greatest season I've, like, ever seen. He's really, really good right now, though, and he bends the game and transforms the game in a manner that makes it impossible to defend the Warriors. Like, you literally have to defend him in a manner where you're allowed to give up backdoor layups every now and then to other guys, or else if you decide you're not giving up backdoor layups, you can't guard Steph Curry. Like, that's crazy, but that's what he does to you.
Well, I mean, yeah, Hans and I were talking about this earlier. Sometimes it's better to take your chances guarding 3 guys guarding 4 than letting Steph getting opportunities.
Right, 100%. I mean, you double Steph off the pick and roll. Draymond averages 9 assists a game. He's suddenly running a 4-on-3. Now, it's not the same 4-on-3 that used to have Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant as a part of it, but it's a 4-on-3 in the middle of the floor, and he's a master at it.
Yep. David Locke joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. So with that said, who do you want to see in the first round?
Like, do you think Oklahoma City or Houston's available?
Well, hopefully not Minnesota, but
right. I didn't say Minnesota. Yeah. So I think we'd get a playoff. I mean, here's the thing that's so tricky about this. Whomever, this is crazy. If we're the one seed or the two seed, but if we're the one seed, whomever we play in the playoffs is going to have a significant playoff experience advantage on us, unless Memphis does something crazy. So, like, yep. My biggest concern is I don't know that our guys know how to beat Steph Curry and Draymond Green in a series yet. Like, they haven't done that. Steph Curry and Draymond Green, what do you think it would be like to try to knock – we go up 3-2 on the Golden State Warriors. What do you think it's going to be like to try to knock Draymond Green out? And, like, do our guys know how to do that yet?
The finish.
Right? And so imagine if you get the Lakers in the first round. And I frankly have a little bit more respect for Steph Curry and Draymond Green in this category than Anthony Davis, but nobody do I have more respect for than LeBron in this category, unless he's just not right. But my biggest concern on this thing is, like, it's crazy because I think it's lining up really nicely for the Jazz, but I'm not sure we can get out of the first round. But if we get out of the first round, then suddenly, other than Kawhi Leonard, like, it's not like it doesn't – it the first round feels more daunting to me trying to – like, if you're in a series and – like, who are the guys that you think if you're in a series and you have to beat them? You've got to beat them, right? You're not just winning a game. You have to beat them. Like, who are the guys that are going to be the most difficult to do that to? Steph and Draymond are number one on my list. LeBron's number two on my list. Who's after that?
Maybe Kawhi.
Kawhi, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. And no one's really sure about his leadership, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's a big drop from 2 to 3.
Uh-huh. Huge drop. And then the next one's like Jokic probably deserves credit. Like, what he did to us last year deserves a lot of credit. What he did to the Clippers last year, like, maybe he should be 3 and Kawhi should be 4 for that reason.
Yeah.
And then probably Luka, just because he's unbelievable. Oh, my gosh. I found a number on Luka yesterday. Of the top 10 pick and roll combinations in the NBA, he's the ball handler in 4 of them.
Oh, jeez.
Like, it's so irrelevant who's running the pick and roll with him. He's just that great. Right? So, okay. So there, like, that's, and I'm sure we've, you know, and we haven't talked about, now, Chris Paul's playoff history tells me the opposite. Chris Paul's playoff history tells me you might not have to beat him. Yeah. He might take care of himself.
Yeah. It's just I was on with a buddy of mine over who's in the Denver market, and he's like, we're like, all right, well, and at that point it was looking, you know, you had the Lakers who were at the 6 at that point. They've dropped down, but, you know, we were just bemoaning the fact that the Jazz might get the Golden State Warriors in the first round, and Denver would get the Lakers, and you'd have everybody in the NBA and every TV market rooting against those individual teams against Steph Curry and LeBron James. And Adam Silver somewhere has got to be smiling at the thought that his play-in game might feature Golden State and the Lakers. And then those two teams, you know, as your 7 and your 8, with an opportunity to move on. I mean, it's setting up nicely for the NBA overall.
All right. I don't know how they're going to do play-in, if they're going to do Eastern Conference TV one night and Western Conference the next, or I would assume they're going to do an Eastern Conference matchup and a Western Conference matchup for TV. And so, let's just say they decided to do 7-8 against each other the first night, giving those teams an advantage. I think they might do 7-8, 7-8, because you give those teams an advantage, then they're in the playoffs, and it's also an advantage to the 2 seed. They have more time to prep. So I'm guessing the league would probably want that. There is a chance that the play-in night could be Boston Celtics, most storied franchise in the East, against LaMelo Ball, probably one of the big draws in the league, right? And on the other side could be Warriors-Lakers. It will be the highest rated TV night in the history of the NBA that's not an NBA Finals.
No doubt. David, always a pleasure, my friend.
Well, that's nice of you to say that, whether it's true or not. I had one other quick note for you. Now I can't remember what it was.
Was it Donovan talking against the play-in tournament?
I didn't hear Donovan, and nor could I see the game when Donovan was on.
Yeah, he was on the TV broadcast.
Yeah,
well,
I'm aware, because I lost half my screen. I was calling the game off when he was on, and that was really hard. So I'm perfectly aware that Donovan was off TV last night.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
That's
it was not great. I mean, I'm not blaming anyone at all. It's the world we live in, but I was like, ah! What did he have to say? Anything interesting?
Well, he said he's not a fan of the playing game because every, you know, your 3 through 6 know who they're going to play and will have a week to prepare, and they won't have that kind of luxury to prepare during that week off while they're waiting on who their opponent's going to be.
That is true. I believe Alex Jensen has the first scout and has to prepare four teams as the one seed.
Yeah.
Not
so
great.
That's it. That, he, you know, we've heard people on the 7, 8, 9, 10 range complain. That's the first time I've heard somebody in the 1, 2 range complain about how this whole thing could play out. But
that's an interesting. It's also an interesting tip of the hat to the the faith Donovan has in his coaching staff to get him ready.
All right. Well, David, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, David.
All right. See you guys.